Hi, Tim.
Hello.
You're right.
I'm all right, yeah. We've just had this conversation, haven't we, off record?
Don't let people behind the door of into the world of Aslan. Don't let them know that through that door.
They think it's all professional and work and then straight to this.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay, and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing.
Hello, audience, to this podcast episode number 8.
Number 8, season 3. Churning them out. Productive is what we are.
Yeah, that's one word for it. Yeah. Or just, as I call my little 5-year-old, we're just chatterboxes.
Chatterbox is nice. Yeah.
It's a nice word, isn't it?
It's nice, yeah.
But today we're going to start talking about where we think marketing starts and where it ends.
Yeah. It's because it's hard to... I like a definition if people out there have not guessed by this time. I know you know. But I like to be able to define a thing, right? And where it starts and ends is a good definition, right? And I think it's a tricky question because it's somewhat subjective, maybe. But I think, right, here's my starter for 10, Bob. Ask your grandparents, people. Marketing starts when you have to do the research to make a decision whether you make something and then try and get people to want it, or you try and understand what people want and then make a product or service that meets that. I think it's in that thinking world, that decision-making world, I would class that as market.
Is that just come off the top of your head, or is that something you've...
Well, no, because I do a bunch of startup mentoring and stuff, yeah. Right? Like some of those people are early idea, like pre-start, let's say, right? Yeah. And I always go, so what have you decided to do? Have you thought of a thing and now you want to try and get people to want it, which is one way people do it? Or have you spotted a need or a hole or a gap in the market or whatever, so something that people want, and you've built it? Because they're two different things, right? They're two different strategies. They're two different directions, although they're under the label startup, proof, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So, and I think...
So it's very data analytical processing type of element.
I don't know, right? I think it's idea generation in my head. So they're going, oh, look at all them people doing that thing. If somebody invented X product, that would solve that, right? It's just an idea, right? Yeah. And then they've gone, I can build X thing, right? Or they've gone, I built this thing. It's a transformable, it's a spork. I built a spork, it's a spoon and a fork.
Did anyone ever need a spork? Like,
and then people are going, why did you? And go, now people will want it. And you've got to try and convince people that sporks are the future, right? Yeah. Idea generation.
Has any KFC who bought into that? Because they used to give sporks away with their coleslaw.
And outdoorsy folks. Like in my outdoorsy kit that I got excited about, I have some sporks because then you have to carry less cutlery.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. There is an audience for it, then.
There is, in the end. I mean, spork was just an example, but there's a shed load or a barrow full of ideas that nobody ever wanted, I don't think.
No, there's loads. Loads. I mean, just watch Dragon's Den, for starters.
But is...
Dark Tank, if you're in America. The amount of ideas that come into there and actually have no legs to stand on. Is there's more of them than there is that are good ideas.
That's it. So is my pitch, I've just said Dragon's Den. Yeah. My pitch is that marketing starts with the process of idea generation.
It's a good pitch and one that I do agree with, but that I think that depends on what type of marketer you are. So a lot of people see marketers as outbound and outgoing and all those different things. And I think we've discussed this plenty of times before. If that's what your view of marketing is, then you wouldn't think that you should be involved at those stages. Whereas a true marketer is a creative. They're part of every step of that decision purchasing journey, that consideration journey. So yes, I believe that a marketer should be involved in those early stages just to quantify what other people are thinking. Because like we said, right, marketing is the voice of the customer or the intended customer, and to prove that there is a customer group there who is interested in it.
So if you're at the stage of needing to create, let's say, product or service or experience, a thing to sell, whatever that is, right? Yeah. That is partly, I'm not saying it's all marketing, right? But marketing should be involved because they do that, A, facilitate idea generation, and B, probably have more chops about the research piece.
Yeah.
The understanding piece, in theory. And that would take us back to, I think Mark Ritson bangs on about this, like marketers don't get a seat at the table for any product or pricing conversations anymore. It used to be all the time. They used to go like, how much can we charge for this thing, marketing people who understand the people we choose to serve? But now, I don't know, I've certainly not been involved in pricing very often in the last decade, a few conversations, right, on new, because we do business model transformation and a bit of product and service design. It's in the ballpark. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But like very few, not like everybody, not every piece of marketing I've been involved in over the last decade, we've looked at pricing at all.
Do you think is that across both product and service and brand, or is it just against products? It'll be mainly around more products and service focused, I would have thought. But
well, anything really. Like pricing is one of the fundamental elements of positioning, right? And positioning is, I don't know, a love child, an offspring of brand. I don't know where I'm going with that analogy. but, you
a
know,
love it's child of brand and what?
We'll ignore that one. We'll just gloss over it professionally, I think, and focus again on pricing, which is the point.
The next 5 minutes, I'm going to be trying to think of who brand got with to get to positioning.
But I think price, you see, just like that, amazing pivot of subject, right? The pricing is part of that positioning, right? It puts you, if you use my favorite positioning analogy is the supermarket test, right? Where do you fit on the supermarket test? Is your brand or products or services Waitrose, or are they farm foods?
Yeah.
Right? Are you know, Sainsbury's, Tesco's, Asda, they all got a distinct position in the market, right? So where do you fit? Right? Where is your thing? So I think it's an important part of positioning, but I'd like Mark Ritson says again, not that this is a Mark Ritson love up show, but there's many businesses out there that go, we're going to give the pricing to the marketing department. They could like, yeah, I don't think so.
it's all intrinsic with each other, isn't it? You know, so when you start thinking of price and you, there's a great analogy, the whole supermarket one. But you could do it across a multiple different things. You could do it across mobile phone manufacturers, for example. and you can go, why does iPhone cost more than the Samsung A20e? Because it's pretty much the same thing, does exactly the same thing, but one's worth £120 and one's worth £1,200. But part of that thing, and it's the same with Waitrose to Farm Food or Iceland or Aldi or Sainsbury's or Tesco's or whatever it is, it's the same fuel you're putting in your body. It's just, you eat to fuel your body. So why would you pay more for a Waitrose or anything? It's about an experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it infiltrates in everything that you do. So in those beginning stages of a product or a service, one of the first questions is where do you want this to sit inside that supermarket analogy? Do you want it to be top-end product? Do you want it to be bargain basement product? All those different things then will feed through to different comms frameworks. It'll go through to different customer groups. It'll go through to different color variations in your color palette for your visual identity for it. It will go through to different social media channels that you'll use. All those different things all come from that one little question of, you know, what is it you're trying to achieve?
So where would that start of that sentence that you said, that where do you want it to fit in this value chain, right? In the market from a value perspective. I would somewhat in my idyllic mind, right, argue that that conversation should be pre-build or design of product and service. Like, how do you know that you can't make a thing and then go, actually, it's a bit shitter than we thought. It's probably Aldi, right? You want to make a Waitrose product.
What they might... So, okay, you could look at this two ways. I work with a lot of products and services people. Yes. There are two trains of thought. One is, right, I understand the problem. So we're going to create a product or a service to do this, and we're going to come up with five or six ideas and then bring these to the table and bring marketing at that stage. So they can have scope over four or five ideas and go, well, that one feels very Waitrose, that one feels very Farm Foods or what have you. The other train of thought is, okay, we've got a problem. Let's get everybody in and let's do some design thinking around it to see what we've come up with and involve marketing at that stage or two. The ones that never work, like you alluded to, are the ones where products or service teams go and make something, then bring it to marketing and say, we've built this. Can you market it for us?
Yeah. Yeah, I get you. I get you. So it's, I mean, part of that is understanding, like spotting a gap in the market for a product service experience, but trying to understand if there's a market in the gap. Because nobody may make a 500 quid toothbrush, right? Because nobody wants a 500 quid toothbrush.
I don't know. Have you seen Oral-B's prices for their electric ones these days?
I've got one, but I think mine was 80.
Yeah, they're always on sale at Christmas for 80, but their usual price is like £239.
Is it really?
Yeah, wow. Ridiculous.
Okay, I'm going to up my ante to £2,000 toothbrush. Nobody wants a £2,000 toothbrush, right?
No.
But many, many, many people want a quid toothbrush.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Completely, yeah.
But so they go, oh, there's a massive gap in the market for a £5,000 toothbrush. You go, yeah, but nobody, there's no market in the gap. Like,
yeah, there is a gap there for a reason.
it's a legitimate gap. It's not nobody's thought of a £5,000 toothbrush.
Hey, it brings us back round to a discussion we had in season one, and I've actually just been having this discussion with my wife, which is around the diffusion of innovation. So what you get to is you get early adopters and then it drops off into the chasm. And a £5,000 toothbrush, you might find a few people who might want it, but you'll never find an early majority who want it.
There'll be a few.
There's people who have got money to burn, and just
I bet Kanye's got one.
Yeah, I actually bought my wife's Valentine's Day card. Said, "I love you like Kanye loves Kanye." So
nice. That's quite a lot. That's a big statement there.
He would spend £5,000 on a toothbrush. It's the same as, do you remember oh, it must have been 12, 15 years ago, Nokia brought out like a diamond-studded phone and called it the Ventu or the Virtue.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and that was, it was a Nokia 5210, something like that, which normal retail price was around 100, £150. But the diamond encrusted one was near enough 7,000. And then it was Porsche designed and all these different things. You know, a few people bought it, but it was never there for mass market.
No, there's a, I remember, we might be on about the same phone, but it was like a flip phone and people can customize it with gold leaf and initials and diamond, like, do you know what, like bling it if they want to. And I'm sure it began with B. It might be the same phone that we're thinking of, but you can all of a sudden have, you know, a phone that's a grand be worth $8,000.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, cool. So it does the same stuff.
It shows that realistically, if you're creating a product in isolation or a service in isolation, you might find one or two, or you might find, you know, 1,000 people who would purchase that. But actually, you haven't done the understanding piece, which is there are 40,000 people over here if we charge half the price.
So if, with that understanding, and you create a thing, product, service, experience to meet, right, you've decided on a thing, I think there's always going to be an area of effectiveness either side for somebody to take that and make it a bit cheaper and take it and make it a bit more. Yeah. But you can't then turn that phone into an aeroplane.
No.
Because there's no market. Like, it's really great. Do you know what I mean? So marketing, marketers, the process of marketing, the broader scope of marketing, right? As we've defined in very early episodes, marketers may be communications experts. They may be on the technical side, so AdWords, analytics, SEO, that sort of thing, right? The tactical side of it, the implementation side of it. They may be on those in the strategy and research and, you know, backstage stuff, not the front stage stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Should really be involved in that because they represent the customer in the organization, right?
But we've also said, you know, time and time again, a good marketer is a facilitator of conversation. So having a marketer in a room would help drive conversations that you probably wouldn't have by yourself or with a product developer and a sales manager and, I don't know, a director of quality, whatever it is. A marketing person will bring in another level of facilitation to those conversations, as well as a good gut reaction to a customer's viewpoint of what's being discussed. And they might not know the answers straight away, but they'll have a better gut reaction, as in, because they deal with the customers on a day-to-day or a weekly or a monthly basis, or understand how customers are likely to interact, they can give a different viewpoint to how other people are in a room.
Yeah. I was going to mention, actually, the ability to challenge assumptions.
Yeah.
Because everybody who makes a product, everybody I've ever met who's made a product or built a thing, right, has gone, I love this thing. And you're going, but what about that? And they're like, no. Like, they just bat it off. And you're like, well, I think challenging as well as facilitating, as well as divergent and convergent thinking, right? The ability to think freely and then define what those thoughts were are part of that understanding process, right? They're bits in it. It's how you do it.
But it's challenging well. That's the bit.
Challenging intelligently, not just being a knob, right?
Yeah, yeah. Basically,
yeah,
you put that so much more concisely than I was about to put that.
Yeah, good, good. Well, I mean, people know what we mean, I think.
Yeah, challenges is a good attribute of a marketer. It should be a good attribute.
So are we comfortable with defining that marketing should start when there's an element of understanding to be done? Is that the right definition? Or I know understanding, my only doubt about that statement is I know understanding needs to happen throughout the customer journey, technically.
Of course it does, but it's marketing should be a part of the design stage for me. If it's post-design, then it's too late.
So in the early exploration of what a design could be, right, you need to involve marketing as early as possible in the process.
And when we say design stage, it is before prototype. It's before any of that. So I quite often work to the McKinsey purchasing model journey in my head through the 7 or 8 stages. And that design stage being the very first one, you know, oh, we've got a problem. What are we going to do about it? That's design. That's problem ideas. It's ideation. It's design thinking stage. And marketing needs to be involved. They should be involved at that stage. They really should.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, cool. So what about the other end? When does it end?
For me, and this is going to sound really, you know, par for the course, it doesn't stop, does it? And I know that's everybody's going to say it doesn't stop. Yeah, you're right, it doesn't stop, because as soon as somebody has purchased a product, service, or has become entangled with your brand, it then turns into the next stage, which turns into customer retention or loyalty, and then turning them into an advocate of what you do. And if you're not doing any of that stage, then what was you doing the thing in the first place for? If you just market to the point of sale, then all you're doing is selling something. What you need to do is move into that next section, which is about customer retainment and customer loyalty, so they turn into your ambassadors of what you do. If you're not focusing on that back end section and going, how do we get a customer to come back to us? How do we get people to tell more people about us? Then you're missing prime opportunities. And actually all you're doing as a marketing team is trying to drive a sale, then letting people drop off. Which is just bad customer bad customer engagement anyway. With all the tools that a purchasing person now has there to give real live feedback, like TripAdvisors or TrustPilots or email comms or direct links into your CEO or your MD or your venture capitalist through LinkedIn, why would you let... You would just wouldn't put that at risk anywhere, would you?
Yep.
So for me, it's more important, if you're going to sit and ask me here and now, what is more important for a marketing department, to be in that design phase or to look after customer loyalty, retention and ambassadorship, I would say you need to be sat at the other end near the ambassadorship.
Yeah. So that sprung a few things up. Because I know from experience, right, I've done these pieces of work, that most friction within organizations between sales and marketing is due to marketing perceiving or being perceived that their work stops at lead generation.
Yeah.
Right. Which, you know, I know businesses that do all right with then sales take over and then account management or customer success or whatever they call it, right, takes over. Yeah. Which to me, I'm going, well, they're all part of the marketing thing. I'm like, no, they're not. They're different. I'm like, why are they? Because I mean, I know me and you are like-minded anyway, because the work we do around customer journey design for people is that all the models we created where the end goal is lifetime customer value.
Yeah.
Right? Not lead generation. It's lifetime.
Even if they only purchase from you once, it's all about being back in that decision journey if they're looking to purchase the same type of thing again, or if they hear of somebody wanting to purchase something like what they've purchased from you that they pass you on.
Yeah.
That I mean, you can't get any better than that as a marketer, can you?
No, this is it. I think I mean, a phrase we've mentioned a bunch, I think, is continual improvement, right? Continual improvement is a mindset, a skill that marketers should have, as we've iterated many times before and won't dwell on it. But I would say, because we're looking for a finite end, like when is the end, right? The example that springs to mind for me is like, if you do marketing for a tech company, right, for example, mm-hmm. or any company, and that company exits, sells, closes, whatever, right? There's elements. Yes, the activity of marketing, right? The marketing as a job ends, but the marketing lives on. It's evergreen, right? Because people will always remember that product and service, company, brand, right? And surely that's still, the reputation lives on. The stories we tell about it, the effect that has on future decision-making for alternative or supplementary or other businesses is still because of the marketing that comes on. So it's like a ripple effect, right? We do marketing now, we do branding now, we do stuff now. That may still be affecting and attracting and rippling, right? Rippling through the market well after we've finished our job, well after the company's shut.
Yeah, and it's happening now. So I was in the car with my two daughters the other day. I don't know where we were going. I can't remember. That's not important anyway. But I mentioned... they were talking about they wanted some new toys, and I went, come on, it's just been Christmas. What are you talking about? It's a real shame that there isn't a Toys R Us that I can walk you around these days. You know, Toys R Us went under 2-3 years ago. And my eldest daughter went, oh, they're thinking about opening Toys R Us in America again. Because the brand is so well missed. And I was like, that's a really nice thing to hear, because we always grew up with a Toys R Us, you know, to go to and go and play basketball in the aisle because your mum and dad won't buy you one. It's the same with Woolworths. You know, Woolworths almost came back online. You know, it's... Could you imagine? I mean, look at Topshop. And I mean, we discussed this the other week, didn't we? Topshop being bought out by ASOS. They're not buying it for the clothes. They're buying it for the brand.
And that's what lives on, though, right? That intangible stuff. The stuff that... people and marketing, like other business people and the colleagues and marketing, will get grief for, is that a lot of it can be seen as intangible until you need it, until it's measurable, until the impact's felt and people go, we really miss Toys R Us. What happened to Toys R Us? And all those people who were bidding to buy Toys R Us but went, everybody shops on Amazon, I'm not getting it. Now have millions of people going, I love Toys R Us. Where's Toys R Us gone? And they're going, oh, bugger.
That's because there is no actual currency value. And I say currency as in money. There is no currency value on emotion. You know, one heart flutter does not equal £10.
It's not transactional. I would say there definitely is a currency value, but it's not transactional.
It's not a measurable currency value, then, is what I mean by that. You can't go, oh, one excited kid for Toys R Us is worth, you know, £400, or it's not, or it's worth $500. It just doesn't work that way. And it's really hard to put a measurement on that, whereas it's really easy to put a measurement on how many people have walked through the door, or how many people saw an advert, or how much it costs to put something in a magazine and how many times that was circulated. And when people ask for a return on investment for marketing efforts, I get why they're asking it, but there are some things you just can't do that with, or you're not going to be able to do that with for another 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. And I think, that, I mean, not to change the subject or the direction, maybe this is another conversation, but maybe that's brand value and market share, which, you know, all the big companies, the biggest companies on the planet, all measure success through brand value and market share.
Yeah.
Right. They know they're going to sell stuff already. Right. Selling stuff is not even, you know, even good medium-sized companies like Everard's Brewery, who I used to work with, right? They got 99 pubs and a brewery, and they make some beer and they turn over a bunch of money. You know, not billions, but, you know, a good, I think it was a, you know, it was a fair couple of hundred million, maybe. Right. It was a good business.
Good turnover.
Right? It's a good business, but they knew they'd sell beer. None of their marketing was selling beer. Nothing. Like, they knew they'd sell beer. They own pubs. Kind of sorted itself out. Right. But all their marketing was getting they were, in theory, a people and a property company. Get the right landlord in the right property. Find the right property, put the right person in it. Job done.
That's what most, like, breweries are, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
I was watching that Tom Kerridge program over Christmas where it was about trying to save Britain's pubs, and everything came down to the landlords and the buildings. It didn't come down to the beer, like you say. They're always going to sell beer.
Yeah, the product and service in, like, I've been banging on about this for donkeys, but the product and service is not the important thing in any business, right? It's the thing. It's the value exchange bit.
Yeah.
Right. We will give you this thing if you give us some money. But the value exchange is not why people choose, right? It's not the only reason people choose you, right? It's not the only decision making thing. It's often something else. Right. People, it's that old analogy. I don't know if it's Seth Godin or Zig Ziglar or something about the drill bits, right? All of the hardware companies and all of the hardware shops, all of the Wilcos across the world selling drill bits when nobody ever wants a drill bit. They need a hole.
Yeah.
Right? But everyone's going, do you want 14 drill bits? Not really. I don't want any drill bits. I need a drill bit to make a hole. Do you know what?
I need 14 size holes at some point.
Yeah. And you know, don't get me wrong, I've bought a set of drill bits, one of which I've used in the last 15 years, I think, probably. Like, I don't need a variety of holes. Don't sell them in nines.
I'm in the market to buy a new set because I've used mine to the bone.
Mate, I've got loads. but it's that I think reputation is a good word, right? Because reputation exists post physical existence, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because you can apply that to individuals as well. You can apply that to, like, Sean Connery, a recent passing,
mm-hmm.
right? His reputation will live on for donkeys. Do you know what I mean? As will, like, Jimmy Savile. I don't want to bring Jimmy Savile into it. But, you know, I wanted a contrast. I like a contrast. But, you know,
I'm going to make a note of the person's name you didn't think you'd hear today.
It's Jimmy Savile. Retro. Yeah. Ask your grandparents.
Every time you hear a chain jangling, that's every time.
But, you know, reputation lives on, right? Like Michael Jackson, Jesus Christ. How many decades was he king of pop until he wasn't?
But is it? No, but he still is.
Well, he's still, he still is, right? But,
like, his reputation got tainted, but it's almost come through the other side of that taintedness as well, which I just find mind-boggling. But it goes back to that earlier point that what's more, if you're a very small market department, just one person who's helping somebody market, where do you need to spend most of your time? Most of your time is going to be spent at the latter stages rather than the beginning stages. It's about customer retention, loyalty. It's about that legacy that you're leaving behind rather than just the deciding piece of what should something be. Because there's always going to be people creating things. We can't help everybody, but we can help most people with their legacy piece.
See, that's marketing as a marketer, right? As an individual person.
Yeah.
But marketing goes from...
You'll be involved on everything.
From everything, right? Your particular bit may touch 14 bullet points on that list. It may touch one.
Yeah, completely.
You know what I mean? But it doesn't mean, like, I think one of the things we're trying to do with this podcast is get people to realize, even though they're in SEO, right, which is an amazing thing. Like, I've tried it and it's too sciencey for me, too detailed, not into it.
Proper clever.
Proper understand the value, like massive, like a real, real specialism doesn't mean you shouldn't understand the rest of it.
Yeah, but your goal as SEO shouldn't be to just
generate website leads.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but that's what they're going to be measured on, you know. And I can understand why people just go, right, that's, I'm staying inside my box because that's what I'm getting measured on. This is what my 20% bonus is going to be attached to, all those things. I need to make sure their goals are hit. That, I get that. I understand it. It's absolutely fine. But if you want to become a better marketer and increase more website visits, then understanding the proposition or the further keywords in different customer groups that would drive you into that SEO is only going to benefit you more.
Absolutely. I think, you know, no matter how bigger or larger or smaller role you play in the marketing thing, I think you said the word advocate or advocacy or something earlier, a version of that, that you are still championing that when your job is said and done, right, when you've moved on to a different company, when the company's closed, when it's sold, when it's exited, whatever happens, right, when it comes to the end, you played a part in somebody on some podcast going, I really miss that brand.
Yeah,
that was a cool brand, right? That's what you're actually doing. Although for your job description, it's a bunch of tasks that may seem unrelated, but in your marketing brain, right, Keep that little, not devil or angel on your shoulder, whatever, little marketing thing, right, on the middle of your head, like one of them stick-on window fuzzies, I think.
A
stick-on window fuzzy, you know, from the 80s. Do you remember the 80s? Anyway.
I remember it, but I don't remember a fuzzy.
Like little balls of fluff. Anyway, you're ruining the analogy, right? Keep that bit in mind that you're part of that brand being missed.
Yeah.
Because that, I think even that, thinking of that, will make you change the pride, maybe even the language you use in stuff. Maybe the impact the time you spend on the job, right? Not that doing it quickly is a bad thing, but, you know, consideration and value and pride is a big thing. Again, we've discussed this in other episodes.
But creating what you do, you know, it doesn't matter if it's SEO or if it's copywriting or if it's identity, whatever it is, having that future thought process of, if somebody saw this in 20 or 30 years' time, how would they feel about it? Is that's, you know, how do you create that nostalgia and pieces like that? It doesn't come across very often, but if you have that in mind every time you do something, then you're only going to get better work, surely.
Exactly. I think that's it. So Steve, let's try and summarize in a sentence, where does marketing start and where does it end? What are the words that we're pinning at the end of those journeys?
So this is going to be about 10 minutes of gobbledygook then before we actually get to that sentence. It doesn't start anywhere, it doesn't end anywhere, because it's part of everything.
Okay, interesting. So I agree totally, and that this is just a different set of words, but I would say it starts with understanding and it ends with, what was that word you just said? Not remembering, you just said like the remembrance of experiences past. Do you know what I mean? It ends far after we're gone.
The legacy piece.
Legacy.
Yeah.
Maybe it's right. From
understanding to legacy.
From understanding, right? So understanding being the point in time where you start to get a grip on what this thing could be, right? Yeah. A real tangible grip of what this thing could be, to its legacy, right? What people think of it after it's gone, how people remember it after it's gone, is marketing.
That's a big old place, isn't it?
Big, it's pretty much everything, as you said. I just used more words.
Yeah, I was trying to be succinct like marketers should be.
Yeah, yeah. On that note, I think we'll end episode 8 with that rocket bomb. Hope you enjoyed it, folks. And see,
I enjoyed that one. It's a bit shorter than usual, but it was hopefully it's got some good little tidbits in there for you to take away.
Good. And we'd like to know your thoughts. If we've got it massively wrong and you're an SEO who doesn't want brands to survive after you leave, then let us know in the comments.
Because as we said, you know, SEO people are a lot cleverer than you and I are.
Definitely.
So please let us know, SEO people.
All right. Peace out. See you in episode 9.
See you on the other side.